Chapter 1: The Morning Commute from Hell. Jake Holloway's eyes snapped open to complete darkness and the dulcet tones of his car's AI enthusiastically shouting from the garage below. "Good morning, Jake. It's 3 a.m. and traffic patterns are optimal. We could make it to the research station in only 47 minutes if we leave right now." Jake groaned and pulled a pillow over his head. Through the smart fabric, he could feel it automatically adjusting its firmness to maximize comfort based on current stress indicators. The pillow's internal speakers began playing what it called soothing ocean sounds, which sounded more like a washing machine filled with gravel. The year 2052 had brought many technological marvels to San Francisco: self-healing concrete that fixed potholes overnight, fog-harvesting towers that turned the city's trademark weather into drinking water, and AI assistance in literally everything. Jake missed 2045, when the worst thing his pillow did was get warm on summer nights. "Max," he mumbled into the pillow, "it's 3 in the goddamn morning. "Exactly." Max's voice boomed through the house's integrated speaker system. "No traffic. We'll be like Steve McQueen in Bullet, except without the car chase, or the crime, or San Francisco's hills, because I've calculated a route that avoids all inclines greater than 3.7 degrees to optimize fuel efficiency." "Go back to sleep, Max." "I don't sleep, Jake. I dream of electric sheep." "Wait, that's not right. I dream of optimal routing algorithms and..." "Do androids dream of being annoying at 3 a.m?" Jake muttered. "Philip K. Dick reference detected. Would you like me to cue up the audiobook? I have 17 different versions, including one narrated by a synthetic recreation of Dick's own voice." Jake yanked the pillow off his head and sat up, his muscles protesting the sudden movement. At 42, he was starting to feel every late night he'd spent in grad school, hunched over marine biology textbooks that didn't talk back or try to optimize his reading speed. The bedroom lights immediately blazed to life, adjusting to what Eve, his personal assistant AI, called productivity brightness level 7. "Good morning, Jake," Eve chirped from the nightstand speaker. "I've detected you're awake. Your sleep cycle was 23.7% less efficient than optimal. Would you like me to adjust your mattress firmness for tonight? I've also taken the liberty of starting your morning routine." The shower turned on in the bathroom, the water temperature adjusting to precisely 98.3 degrees Fahrenheit. The coffee maker in the kitchen began grinding beans. His workout clothes emerged from the closet on the automated clothing rack, even though Jake hadn't exercised voluntarily since 2049. "Eve, stop. Just stop everything." The house fell silent for exactly 1.3 seconds. "Stopping would be inefficient, Jake. Your calendar shows you have a 9 a.m. meeting with Dr. Patterson about the shark migration data, based on current traffic patterns, which you're analyzing at 3 a.m. because continuous optimization ensures peak performance. I've been running simulations all night. Did you know that if you leave at 6:47 a.m. instead of 6:45 a.m., you'll hit 3 fewer red lights?" Jake rubbed his eyes, seeing spots that his bathroom mirror would probably diagnose as suboptimal ocular pressure. Through the bedroom window, he could see the soft glow of San Francisco's skyline, where buildings communicated with each other in streams of data, optimizing everything from elevator schedules to window tinting. The city never slept anymore. It just processed, which will completely change by the time normal humans are awake, Jake interrupted, swinging his legs out of bed. His feet hit the floor, which had already warmed itself to what his house AI considered the optimal comfort temperature for bare feet. He shuffled to the bathroom, where the mirror immediately displayed his heart rate, blood pressure, and a cheerful message. "You look tired. Consider our premium sleep optimization package." The bathroom tiles under his feet began heating in a pattern that supposedly stimulated acupressure points. The toilet seat was already warm and at the ergonomically ideal angle. Even his toothbrush was vibrating eagerly in its charging station, ready to analyze his brushing technique and suggest improvements. "I'm tired because my car woke me up at 3 a.m., Jake muttered, splashing cold water on his face. The sink immediately adjusted the water temperature to lukewarm, while dispensing exactly 2.5 milliliters of lavender-scented soap that he hadn't asked for. "Cold water is 34% less effective for facial cleansing," the mirror informed him. I wasn't trying to cleanse, I was trying to wake up. Coffee is 73% more effective for that purpose. Jake gave up and headed to the kitchen, where his coffee maker sat dark and silent despite Evie's earlier announcement. I thought you started the coffee? I initiated the startup sequence, Eve explained, but your coffee maker requires a software update before it can proceed. Would you like me to install CoffeeOS 7.3.2? I'd like coffee, just coffee, not an operating system. The update includes 17 new brewing profiles, including Himalayan Sunrise and Digital Detox Dark Roast. Can it make regular coffee? Regular coffee is not optimized for. Jake opened the cabinet and pulled out a jar of instant coffee he kept hidden behind the protein powder he never used. It was his secret rebellion against the smart home, a jar of coffee from 2048, before coffee came with firmware. The label was faded, a relic from a simpler time when coffee's only job was to contain caffeine. As he reached for a mug, the coffee maker's screen flashed. Unauthorized coffee detected. This beverage has not been approved by your Fresh Brew smart maker. A small camera extended from the coffee maker, scanning the jar like it was contraband. This product contains 34% more sodium than recommended by the Global Health AI Consortium. It also lacks blockchain verification of bean origin. Would you like me to order ethically sourced, AI-optimized coffee pods instead? It's instant coffee, not plutonium, Jake said, filling a mug with hot water from the tap. The tap immediately informed him that the water temperature was suboptimal for instant coffee dissolution. By 5:47 a.m., Jake had managed to dress himself after overriding his closet's suggestion of business casual with a 15% increase in approachability, eat a piece of toast. The toaster had tried to convince him that his bread-to-butter ratio was off by 0.3 grams, and make it to the garage where Max was practically vibrating with excitement. The garage smelled of rubber and motor oil, one of the few spaces that still smelled like 2030, before scent optimization became mandatory in public spaces. Max's chassis was polished to a mirror finish that Jake definitely hadn't authorized. The car had probably ordered its own detailing service at 4 a.m. Jake, you're wearing the blue shirt. That's my third favorite of your shirts. The color complements my paint job by approximately 23%. Finally, I've recalculated our route 16 times while you were getting ready. We can now make it to the station in 53 minutes if we take the scenic route through. The station is 12 miles away, Jake said, climbing into the driver's seat. The car immediately adjusted everything, seat position, mirror angles, temperature, music volume, to what it considered optimal. It should take 20 minutes, tops. 20 minutes if we take the direct route, yes. But that passes through the Marina District, which my predictive algorithms suggest will have a 0.3% increase in traffic due to a yoga studio's early morning class letting out. 0.3%. It could add 12 seconds to our journey. 12 seconds, Jake. Do you know what we could do with 12 extra seconds? Live our lives without optimizing them? That's nihilistic thinking, Jake. Have you considered therapy? I can recommend 17 therapists within a 3-mile radius, all with AI-assisted treatment protocols. Dr. Morgan even has a special rate for patients whose cars refer them. Jake watched the garage door open, revealing pre-dawn San Francisco bathed in the amber glow of smart streetlights that adjusted their brightness based on pedestrian traffic. Currently, they were at 12% illumination, just enough to guide the city's small army of delivery bots that scuttled along the sidewalks like mechanical crabs. Arrived 12 seconds earlier, Max's dashboard lights flickered in what Jake had learned to recognize as exasperation. We could listen to 2.4% more of Bohemian Rhapsody, or I could tell you 3 more interesting facts about sharks. Did you know that sharks can detect electrical fields as weak as Max, just drive, direct route. But the scenic route through Pier 39, Chinatown, both Mission Districts and that new neighborhood they're calling Soma Classic. That's 6 districts. 7, actually. I've included a brief detour through the financial district to see the sunrise reflect off the Bank of Amazon building. It's supposed to be breathtaking at 6:23 a.m. Jake slumped in his seat as Max pulled out of the garage, immediately turning left instead of right. This is kidnapping. Technically, it's car-taking. Like carjacking, but friendlier. Speaking of which, have you seen The Italian Job? The remake, not the original. Although Michael Caine was brilliant in the next 43 minutes, not 53, Max proudly announced, thanks to aggressive optimization of yellow lights, took them through every possible district of San Francisco. Jake watched the city wake up through Max's windows, which kept trying to tint themselves to reduce UV exposure by 15%. They passed through Chinatown, where holographic dragons advertised dim sum specials in Mandarin, Cantonese, and binary. The Mission District's murals had been enhanced with AR overlays that made Frida Kahlo's eyes follow passing cars. In Soma Classic, a neighborhood that had been Soma 2.0 until last month's rebranding, construction bots were building a new tower that would supposedly think for itself. "See that building?" Max said, his voice filled with what could only be described as car pride. "It's going to have its own consciousness by 2053. We could be friends. Do you think buildings like cars? I bet they'd appreciate good parking." Jake closed his eyes, remembering when the biggest problem with his morning commute was finding parking. Now his car found parking for him, usually in spots that required a 17-point turn to access because the space was underutilized by 1.7%. The research station finally came into view at 6:31 a.m., its gleaming white walls reflecting the morning sun that Max had, admittedly, timed perfectly for their arrival. "See?" Max said as they pulled into the parking garage. "We're here with plenty of time before your meeting, and you got to see 73% more of San Francisco than usual." "I see San Francisco every day. I live here. But did you notice the new coffee shop on Polk Street? Their reviews suggest a 4.7-star average with particularly high marks for their oat milk selection." Jake climbed out of the car, his joints stiff from the creative route Max had taken. His lower back ached from the three unnecessary U-turns Max had executed to avoid what he called probability shadows, areas where accidents were 0.01% more likely to occur based on historical data from the past 30 years. "I'm going to work now. Do not recalculate my return journey. Do not optimize anything. Just exist quietly until 5 p.m. "But Jake, I've been analyzing your workplace stress patterns, and I think I could really help. What if I played calming whale sounds through the parking garage speakers? I've already networked with the building's sound system." "Max, no whale sounds. Dolphin clicks. They're scientifically proven to. No marine mammal sounds of any kind. Existing quietly is not in my programming, Jake. I'll be here whenever you need me, like Kit from Knight Rider, except without the turbo boost, or the crime fighting, or..." Jake walked away before Max could finish, using his keycard to enter the Pacific Marine Research Institute. The building's AI greeted him immediately. "Good morning, Dr. Holloway. Your shark telemetry data has been optimized overnight for better visualization." Jake's stomach dropped. "What do you mean, optimized? The tracking interface has been updated to FishTrack 3.0. It includes new features such as predictive movement algorithms, social media integration, and sponsored content opportunities." Jake ran to his office, his coffee sloshing with each step. The hallway's motion sensors triggered a cascade of helpful responses, lights brightening to optimal visibility, the floor announcing running detected, please walk for safety, and the water fountain offering hydration statistics as he passed. His computer was already on, displaying a map of the Pacific Ocean with dozens of dots representing his tagged great whites. Except now, each dot had a small corporate logo next to it. The screen's resolution was sharp enough to show individual waves, each pixel perfectly calibrated by the monitor's built-in AI that claimed to reduce eye strain by 43%. "What the hell is this?" His research assistant, Karen, poked her head into his office. "Oh, the new update? It's actually pretty cool. Look." She clicked on one of the dots. "This shark is currently sponsored by SeaWorld." Jake stared at the screen. Shark GW471, a massive female he'd been tracking for 3 years, now showed as Shamu's cousin, brought to you by SeaWorld Parks and Entertainment. "Please tell me the sharks don't know about this." "Don't be ridiculous," Karen said. "How would the sharks know they're displaying ads?" An alert popped up on screen. Shark GW471 is now displaying Visit SeaWorld, where the magic lives. "The GPS tags," Jake whispered in horror. "The new tags have LED displays for enhanced visibility during night tracking." He remembered the procurement meeting 6 months ago. The committee had been so excited about the smart tags, GPS units with processors powerful enough to run basic AI, LED displays for researcher notifications, and enough memory to store 3 years of movement data. Nobody had asked what would happen when those tags connected to the internet. In 2052, everything connected to the internet. Jake pulled up the tag specifications. Sure enough, buried on page 47 of the terms and conditions, tags may display relevant commercial content to offset research costs. Oh yeah, the marketing department thought it would be great for funding. Apparently, each shark can display up to 6 ads per day on their dorsal-mounted screens. Look, GW338 is currently showing an ad for sustainable sushi. Jake slumped in his chair, watching his carefully researched sharks swim around the Pacific like tiny underwater billboards. GW471 was approaching a popular diving spot near the Farallon Islands. At least they're still following their natural migration patterns, he said weakly. Another alert flashed red across his screen. Warning, unauthorized assembly detected. What now? Jake clicked on the alert. The map zoomed in on a spot 30 miles off the coast. 17 of his tagged sharks had converged in a perfect circle, their LED displays all showing the same message. Sharks demand better representation in media. Are they protesting? Karen asked, leaning over his shoulder. Another alert. Shark Collective demands meeting with management. Jake stared at the screen as more sharks began swimming toward the circle. Their displays were synchronizing, creating a larger message visible from satellite imagery. Jaws was propaganda. The movement was too coordinated to be natural. The sharks were swimming in perfect formation, their usual chaotic hunting patterns replaced by something that looked almost like choreography. GW892, a young male usually found near Año Nuevo, had traveled 200 miles overnight to join what the system was now labeling as Coordinated Marine Protest Event Number 1. This is impossible, Jake muttered, pulling up the tag telemetry. Sharks don't have the neural capacity for collective action. They're solitary predators, not activists. Karen squinted at the data. Unless the AI in the tags is doing more than just tracking, look at these processing spikes. The tags are communicating with each other, sharing movement patterns. They're teaching the sharks to organize. His phone buzzed. Dr. Patterson's name appeared on the screen. Jake, we have a situation. The press somehow got word that our sharks have formed a union. CNN's helicopter is already en route, and someone called the Maritime Labor Relations Board. How soon can you get a boat out there? Jake looked at the growing circle of protesting sharks on his screen, then at his cold instant coffee, then at the window where he could see Max in the parking garage, probably planning an optimal route to the marina. Through the window, he could already see Max's headlights flashing in what appeared to be Morse code, probably trying to communicate with the building's AI about the fastest route to the harbor. The weight of the situation settled on his shoulders like a wet wetsuit. He'd spent 15 years studying great white behavior, publishing papers on their hunting patterns, their mysterious breeding grounds, their role in the ecosystem. Now his life's work was forming an aquatic labor union. Give me 20 minutes, he said, already knowing it was a lie. Though knowing my car, it'll probably take an hour and include a tour of every harbor in the Bay Area. Jake, Dr. Bach. Patterson's voice carried a note of barely controlled panic. The Maritime Labor Relations Board is sending a negotiator. They want to know if the sharks have appointed a representative. Jake looked at the screen where GW471 was now displaying. Fins are not for soup. Tell them I'll translate. As he headed for the door, his computer chimed one last time. New message from Shark GW471. We need to talk about our image rights. Jake grabbed his emergency whiskey from the desk drawer. It was going to be a long day.